Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here,
reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion
or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey everyone, this is Sam from the suburbs of Chicago. Do you find yourself constantly on the go? Are you overworked, stressed, tired, need a break? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're conscious or semi-conscious, if you have a pulse, ears, are you above the ground and breathing on your own? If you can't drive 55, but you sure as hell can go 88, then I got the show for you. All the killer, none of the filler. I am proud to introduce Jason and Dee's Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. Enjoy.
Okay, Jason, I have a new criteria. As you know, we frequently have guest hosts come on here. I've got a new criteria that you have to meet in order to be a guest host on the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Okay. What is it?
You have to be able to hammer a 6-inch spike into a board with your penis.
Don't be a degenerate.
Me? What about that time I caught you naked with a bowl full of Jell-O?
I was hot and I was hungry.
All right, now that all the moms have turned to the channel.
Right, exactly.
Welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back for another fantastic episode of 1985 Movies, because we are here to talk about the movies Real Genius and Weird Science.
I know. These are like nerds just want to have fun, right?
I know. 1984, we found out that nerds can be heroes, and it took off like a freaking firecracker, like a spaceship out of the back of a house, right?
That's right.
I mean, because we covered a little earlier this season, we covered One Crazy Summer and Better Off Dead, both totally nerds against, yeah. You know, the snobs against the slobs, right?
Right.
And we've got a couple of movies that are just both icons of 1985, which we've been talking about doing for years. We finally put it on the schedule this year, and tragically, it falls just after the death of Val Kilmer.
You know, that one really hit me hard. He was somebody that I enjoyed his movies. I found him funny. He was dramatic. He was could be a romantic lead. He kind of covered the board and just a super skilled guy and real loss.
Yeah, truly. And it was funny because when they announced his death, like the New York Times included the Batman role on there. And I'm like, guys, I mean, of all the roles, you're going to mention Batman? Come on.
I mean, it's an iconic role, but he didn't.
But not for him.
He didn't really do a
whole
lot.
No, no.
Yeah.
I mean, say Doc Holliday, say Jim Morrison. Say Chris Iceman. Knight. Yeah, Chris Knight even. Yes, yeah. But not Batman.
I'll tell you this. For me, the most iconic roles of Val Kilmer, I mean, it's Iceman, it's Jim Morrison, and it's Chris Knight. And Doc Holliday.
Yeah. Well, and he said after Top Gun, he has never, ever been in an airport where another pilot didn't call him Iceman.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah, right? I mean, how many pilots are pilots because of that movie, right?
Oh, I know my roommate in college was one.
Exactly.
Doug Huggin, friend of the show.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, guys, we have covered Top Gun. Definitely go back and check that episode out. We also covered the soundtrack. Go check that episode out. We compared it to Maverick, which is one of the best, I mean, come 20th century to the 21st century remake or reboot or whatever you want to call it, best sequels I've ever seen.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
By the way, funny story.
Yes.
My roommate in college, Doug Huggin,
yes,
friend of the show, you've met him. He would put in the Top Gun VHS tape in our room, hit pause to look at and make sure he's putting his uniform together the right way.
That's fantastic.
Love you, Doug. All right. So we're talking about Weird Science, which is a John Hughes movie.
Yep.
We really haven't, we've dipped our toe a little bit into John Hughes, but we really haven't gone all the way.
This is the first one of the John Hughes movies that we've talked about that he directed.
Right. I mean, he directed this one intentionally. He made a deal with the studio, essentially.
Yeah.
You let me direct the one I really want, and I'll direct this one.
Okay.
And the one he really wanted to direct?
Yeah.
The Breakfast Club.
Oh, wow.
And well, they said, okay, go. Listen.
There you go.
If you direct Weird Science, we'll let you do The Breakfast Club.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So, because it was just a comedy. He was a comedy guy, and Breakfast Club was so much more, so dramatic, so impactful. What a great, oh my goodness.
We're planning on covering that later this season.
Yep. I'm excited to talk
about
that.
Hold tight about that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was going through, so the John Hughes movies that I think we've covered so far, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know we've done Home Alone, which he wrote.
Right.
We've done Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation, which he wrote both of those.
Yes.
Vacation is where Anthony Michael Hall kind of breaks in.
Exactly.
To Hollywood.
Yeah.
I heard him talk about that, though. Even though John Hughes wrote that script, Anthony Michael Hall did not meet him until on the set of 16 Candles.
Oh, okay.
And I had always kind of thought, well, gosh, you know, Hughes wrote it. There's Anthony Michael Hall, and that's where it began.
I mean, to listen to Anthony Michael Hall talk about their relationship, it was an amazing, like, we talked when we were talking about One Crazy Summer and Better Off Dead, we talked about that John Cusack, before he did those movies, was one of the two sidekick, you know, King of the Geek, Farmer Ted had.
Yeah.
And the other one was in Real Genius. Did you see him? Another little cameo bit. I told you he had a tiny little cameo bit in One Crazy Summer, and he has a tiny little cameo bit in Real Genius as well.
What?
Yeah, they're walking down the hall doing stuff. Like, I think it may have been at the party with the cosmetology students or whatever they are.
The tanning invitational?
Yes. Yeah, but just one of those things where it's just like they're watching the girl walk by, and I'm like, oh, there he is again. But all that to say, Anthony Michael Hall had developed such a relationship with John Hughes at that point that when they were auditioning the sidekicks, he said, why don't you pick these guys? Because they're going to be your friends.
Your friends, right.
You pick them. And he was like, I get to pick? I mean, we're talking about, what is he, like 16, 17-year-old kid?
Not even.
Yeah. And he gets to, so he picked John Cusack.
That's right.
And the other dude, whatever his name is.
Right.
Can't remember. It's real smooth, Cliff.
Hey, I got something for you.
Yeah.
And we'll get into casting here in a few minutes, but right. Do you know who almost was hired to be Chris Knight in Real Genius?
No.
John Cusack.
Wow. Well, that would have been something.
It's just, you know, it's just this pool of young actors just kind of moving around each other all the time.
I know. You were telling me stories about the actors that were hanging out with each other, of course, on the set, but also because Back to the Future was being filmed at the same time, hanging out with those guys as well.
You want me to tell that story?
Tell the story.
Let's start off.
Yeah, like, right, yeah.
So these are both Universal movies.
Yeah.
Both being filmed at the same time.
Yep.
So Weird Science is being filmed right next to the studio where Back to the Future is being filmed.
Right.
And I was listening to Judy Aronson talk about this, and she is the one who plays Hilly. She's one of the girls.
Right, right. The brunette.
Right. And she said, so they're right next to us. We were next to them. We're all young. We're all hanging out. We're watching that movie be filmed. And she's like, I was just off camera when all this stuff was going on. I was watching them film Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So we wrapped up Weird Science and left. And she said, and to me, Back to the Future starred Eric Stoltz, mm-hmm, because that's the way it was. And when I left, that's the way it had continued to be.
Right.
And so she was like, what? Michael J. Fox? Holy cow. When did that happen? You know?
Right, right.
So anyway, she was saying that Eric Stoltz was actually not the first Marty McFly. Right. And so I was like, wait a minute. Because to me, it was Eric. They went after Michael J. Fox. They hired Eric Stoltz, and then they replaced him with Michael J. Fox. Well, that's not totally true. So according to her, and I went online and I found some corroborating video evidence of this. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So they went after Michael J. Fox. They didn't get him.
Uh-huh.
They hired C. Thomas Howell to be Marty McFly.
Soul Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pony Boy. Yes. Yeah. Well, here's what happened. The movie Mask came out, and Sid Sheinberg, who we've talked about in our Jaws episode, he's the head of Universal, and he said, this kid who's starring in this Mask movie is the bee's knees. We need to hire him. And so they fired Tommy Howell, brought in Eric Stoltz. Keep in mind, this is the same guy who said, we need to not call this Back to the Future. We need to call it Spaceman from Pluto or whatever.
Right. It's a tragedy.
Yes. But Zemeckis ultimately made the call. Eric Stoltz is not working. Get him out of here. Bring in Michael J. Fox. And here we go.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, and Elon Mitchell Smith had just been.
It's like Elon Musk.
Well, okay. Is it?
I heard that's how they were.
Okay. Because being addressed. I was just listening to Anthony Michael Hall in the interview, and he called him Elon. Like
you be Elon?
Elon, yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Who knows? We don't know him. Right. His name is spelled I-L-A-N. If you want an easy name to pronounce, pick a different name. We'll call him Mitchell Smith. Right. Anyway, he had just been in a movie before He had just been in a movie before Weird Science with Eric Stoltz. He was in, what was the name of that movie?
It's called The Wildlife.
The Wildlife. I was like, it's wild something. Yeah.
Yeah. You know who else was in that movie?
Chris Penn, Leah Thompson.
Those are
the two biggies, yeah.
I think that is a Cameron Crowe movie.
It is, yes. That was the other name I was thinking of. Cameron Crowe wrote that movie. And, of course, Chris Penn would go on to do Footloose.
Yes.
And Kevin Bacon, of course, we talked about that in our Footloose episode. Go back and check out our Footloose episode. And we did the movie and the soundtrack on that one as well.
It was good.
But going back to Val Kilmer, he had, when he very first started into like career acting, he had been, you know, acting since he was a little kid. But when he started in career acting, he was in a stage play called Slab Boys, I think was the name of the show.
Okay.
And he had gotten the lead role. And then they were like, oh, wait, we can get Kevin Bacon. Do you mind doing the second lead? And he was like, okay, I'll do the second lead. And they're like, oh, wait, we got Sean Penn. Do you mind doing the third? So he had went from star of the show to butt of all of the jokes in this. But his first like major acting gig was starring in this play with Sean Penn and Kevin Bacon.
How about that?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
I got a story for you.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, so in March of 1975, McDonald's has this contest, and it's just in California, okay?
Right, right.
And they're going to be giving away stuff, big prizes, but it is literally a three-week entry period, right? It's a real short entry window.
Right.
But it's March 3rd through March 23rd. And there are three students at Caltech.
Yeah.
Steve Klein, David Novikoff, and Barry Megdahl. And they notice on the little, they're reading the legal blueprint, you know, the stuff there. They're reading the the boilerplate stuff, and it says, enter as often as you wish.
No purchase necessary.
No purchase necessary. And so they start thinking about it, and they're like, well, what happens if we really just follow the letter of the law here?
Right.
So they recruit about 23 other friends from their dormitory, the Page House at Caltech, and they go to, we're talking mid-70s, big IBM mainframe computer.
Yeah.
They program the computer to print out these sheets of entry forms for this contest, because it wasn't like where you had to have a particular form. You could make your own. And on the last day of the contest, they got all the sheets. They went to a print shop. They cut them all up over. And on the last day of the contest, they and their 23 friends went and stuffed 98 McDonald's boxes.
On the last day?
On the last day with 1.2 million entries.
Good for them.
1.2 million entries. Now, there were cash prizes, gift certificates, gear of groceries, and a Datsun Z available as prizes.
Right.
Okay. But the total entry for the contest was something like 3.4 million. So they had a third of the entries, right?
Right.
They ended up winning 20% of the prizes, including the groceries, the car, and much of the cash and the gift certificates and stuff like that, which very similar line came from one of them. I'm not really sure how we had a third of the entries, but only won a fifth of the prizes. I don't know how that math works out.
Yeah.
But that was the inspiration for Laszlo Hollyfield and his entry of the Frito-Lay contest because, and here's the rest of where it loops all the way back around, the Caltech students were inspired by a similar hoax, act, prank, whatever you want to call it, from guys from Caltech from 1969 who did it in a Frito-Lay contest.
Really?
Yep. So that is the inspiration for Laszlo Hollyfield's machine of Frito-Lay entries.
I love it. I love it.
These are entries into the Frito-Lay sweepstakes. No purchase necessary, enter as often as you want, so I am.
That's great. How many times?
Well, this batch makes it 1,650,000. I should win 32.6% of the prizes, including the car.
Weren't you telling me a legal type of story? Remember where Pepsi did some competition in the early 90s?
Yeah, you could win a jet.
A Harrier jet.
If you reached a certain amount of points, you like it, and it specified.
Like $2 million
It was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be like 1,000,000 points, but they just, the guys for the ad team didn't put the right zero in there, so it was like 100,000 points. And yeah, some kid
wanted to claim his Harrier jet.
He entered enough to get the 100,000 points, and Pepsi said no, and there is a big old ugly lot. There's a whole documentary on it. It's really quite good. Yes.
Okay, where do we want to start here?
I would say let's start with Real Genius.
Okay. All right, Dee, before you start talking about Real Genius, I just want you to know that compared to us, most people have the IQ of a carrot. We're different. Better.
Let's just pause, put that down. Let's just take a step back. No, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Take a step forward. Now take a step back. One step forward. And a step back. And then we're cha-ching.
Will you stop it? I'm serious.
Okay, I'm serious too.
All right. So we start with a guy named Neil Israel, who he started off, he was raised in New York and was an assistant to Broadway producer and director George Abbott, who was a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Okay.
And he eventually made his way out to L.A., where he became an executive at ABC and CBS. And he wrote and directed a little independent film called Tunnel Vision.
Okay.
Tunnel Vision introduced, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Chevy Chase, Al Franken, and John Candy.
What?
His next movie was a movie called Ringo, which starred Ringo Starr and George Harrison and Vincent Price, John Ritter, and Carrie Fisher.
What?
Like, I've never heard of either one of these movies, but I'm like, what? This is like mid-70s, right? Like Carrie Fisher has just finished with Star Wars and she's in this guy's movie. And then he starts writing with his writing partner for several other shows, a guy named Pat Proft. Now, Pat Proft helped him write the original Police Academy.
I know.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So before you go any further.
Yes.
Neil Israel, I believe, is the guy when Hightower smashes into the back of the car. The guy gets out of the car and says, "You dumb idiot," and sticks his head in. And he's like,
"That's right." Yeah. And then Neil Israel went on to write and direct a movie called Bachelor Party, which introduced us to
Tom Hanks. And Connie Katane.
Oh, my goodness. And so he's just got this history of writing these movies that, well, they introduce us to people who become big mega stars.
Right.
And then he writes this movie called Real Genius.
Look, I want to start seeing a lot more of you in the lab.
Fine. I'll gain weight.
You're very funny, boy.
Thanks, Jerry. We try.
Now, Martha Coolidge gets the script, and I think she turned it down the first time she saw it. And so it went through some major rewrites with a couple of script doctors that we've talked about before, a guy named Lau Gantz, and you'll remember this name, Babalu Mandel. You remember Babalu Mandel?
Yes.
If you don't remember them, wrote Night Shift, Splash, Spies Like Us, and when we talked about them, it was because they had written Multiplicity.
That's right.
Go back and check out our Groundhog Day versus Multiplicity episode. Fantastic episode.
Yes.
They doctored it up. Still wasn't quite good enough. So she got together. Martha Coolidge got together with a guy named PJ. His name was Peter at the time, but he transitioned.
Did he?
To she.
Oh, okay.
To she in like 2001. But anyway, back then he was Peter, or she was Peter, and they worked on the script together to get it where it needed to be, and it was always going to be a revenge movie, but she didn't have the end. She didn't know what the end was going to be. And the end is maybe one of the most iconic parts of the 100%. Movie, right? Like 100%. Everybody, if you talk about that movie, they're going to be like, I wonder how they did this, right?
Right.
And so it was, I can't remember the guy's name, God forgive me, but he like helped design some of the Star Wars guys. He helped design the DeLorean in Back to the Future. Like, whoa, he had done all of this amazing design work, and he was the one that suggested the popcorn destroying the house ending.
Really?
Yes.
That's fantastic. You know, Martha Coolidge got her movie start with the movie called Valley Girl.
Yes.
Which introduced us to Nick Cage.
Yep.
And Deborah Foreman.
Who makes her lovely appearance in this movie.
Have she shows up.
Have you ever seen a body like that before? She's my daughter. Guess you have.
funny, right? But this movie was originally supposed to be more like along the lines of Revenge of the Nerds, kind of boobs and jokes and, you know, revenge and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Martha Coolidge was like, wait a minute, guys, let's rein this in. Let's make it smart. Let's make the nerds the heroes. And, you know, let's make this a smart comedy rather than just take the cheap low road.
She spent months researching laser technology, CIA policies and tactics, and she spent months interviewing Caltech students about what they did at Caltech. You know, when he's spouting off some of the stuff, and I can't possibly repeat it because science is not my bag, man, right, but he's spouting some of that stuff off. I had to pause the movie and I looked it up. It's accurate stuff. The stuff that they are saying is, I mean, is it accurate that you can destroy a house with popcorn? No, probably not. But, like, the science that they're shooting out of their mouths that makes it sound really complicated is real, genuine
it's
science.
It's a gaseous, not chemical state.
I understood this is ice. This is what happens to water when it gets too cold.
Right.
This is Kent. This is what happens when someone gets too sexually frustrated.
It's so funny, right? Yes. This movie is very clever.
It's so good, yeah.
Val Kilmer's giving like this dry, clever humor.
Mm-hmm.
He's dropping jokes,
yeah,
but he's looking at you deadpan, but he also will chuckle with you too, you know?
Why is that toy on your head?
Because if I wear it anywhere else, it chafes. I'm sorry, it's just that I didn't want you guys to think I was stuffy, you know? No fun. All brain, no penis.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. It's just an infantile response to authority.
Yes, you are Chris Knight, aren't you?
I hope so. I'm wearing his underwear.
It's a joke. I get it. That's funny.
Well, I just can't help but you guys are such fun yourselves.
Well, we try to be. Isn't that right, Mike?
No.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's a joke. He's like, that's a joke.
It's the perfect delivery. It really is. So here's something interesting. Like, I was telling you, you know, I caught the beginning of the Val documentary.
Right.
And he wanted to be an actor from the time he was a very little kid. His older brother Wesley Kilmer was an aspiring film director. And he said his creativity was dwarfed by his creativity.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Okay.
Super creative guy. And Val says he remembers the first time being on stage and making a group of people laugh. And he says, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And he ends up being the youngest person ever accepted into the Juilliard School of Acting. Before he goes, he has a dream. And his dream, he is with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's mother. And his girlfriend's mother tells him that she is not afraid of death because at that point she will get to meet her creator. He is awakened from this dream to his other brother telling him that Wesley passed away the night before, had an epileptic seizure in their whirlpool and drowned. And he goes to Juilliard in this kind of despondent state, and Wesley was also an avid painter and illustrator, and so he put all of his artwork up in his dorm room walls, right? Now, he ultimately gets the Top Secret, which is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
I definitely think we need to cover that at some point.
Sure.
But he said it was just fluff, you know. This is Zucker, Abrahams and Zucker parody piece,
it's
right?
It's what they came out after Airplane, you know?
Yes. And so he kind of felt silly, but he said whatever kind of work he was doing, he would try to find the truth behind it. He was an actor's actor, studied with the best, right?
Yeah.
Meets his wife out there. He comes back And in the documentary, they jump over with just the shortest little clip of real genius. They go right from Top Secret to Top Gun. But in that short little clip, if you're not watching, you'll miss it. You remember what the dorm room looked like in Real Genius.
Sure.
Had the Einstein and all the other
big
stuff.
Saturn on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the pieces of artwork on the wall was his brother Wesley's drawings.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Nice moment.
I don't get the impression that Val was very proud of Real Genius.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of blew by it, and he even didn't want to do Top Gun. I mean, he said, I had signed a contract and I didn't really have any choice.
Tony Scott basically said, no, you're doing this.
Yeah. And he admired Tony Scott a lot in that process, but he didn't expect it to be as big as it was, and he wasn't excited about doing it. But that's three for three. I mean, I love all of those movies, Top Secret, Real Genius, and Top Gun, that he was just wrong about that movie. So
yeah, that's right.
But you got to pay your dues, whatever.
Do you remember the last time we talked about a movie with Tony Scott and Val Kilmer?
Or is it not Top Gun?
Not Top Gun.
No.
True Romance.
Oh, right. Because Val is the invisible Elvis. That's right.
He's the mentor.
The mentor. Yes, because they couldn't call him Elvis. And they never showed his face. It was just his voice and his hands and his jacket or whatever. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Now Tony Scott and Val Kilmer are both gone.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Yep.
Tragic.
If you want to be a party animal, you have to learn to live in the jungle. Now stop worrying and go and get dressed.
John Hughes got the idea for Weird Science from the comic book Weird Science.
Called Weird Science,
Weird Science. Now, you remember when we did Creepshow with Amanda Janik?
Yeah.
Compared it to Twilight Zone. We talked about Bill Gaines and he had those comic books that would, you know, you'd see the severed head or whatever. And they put the controls in effect, like the rating for comic books into effect because of some of his stuff.
Right.
Well, one of the guys that he worked with who was big on the EC comics that he did and big on Mad Magazine was a guy named Al Feldstein.
Okay.
And back when they were doing EC comics and doing Weird Science, Al Feldstein had a story that was called Made, M-A-D-E, of the future, made of the future.
Yeah.
And this was the inspiration. The first, I've only seen the first frame, but it's a guy whose fiance is calling off the engagement and saying she's going to go marry some guy named Bob. And then it looks like he's got his future bride, his Frankenstein's bride, ready to pull the plug on.
You know, this is how dumb I am. It took me about 10 times through Weird Science to realize this is a retelling of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
It is. That's right.
And, you know, I know it. They even watched the movie and get their inspiration from
right
watching
there.
The movie.
It's alive.
Right. Well, when you think you're watching a teenage sex comedy, you're not thinking Frankenstein, you know? So I think that's fantastic. John Hughes wrote this screenplay in 2 days.
Yeah. He said, and Anthony Michael Hall, what I caught was they were in the middle of filming what was Breakfast. No, it couldn't have been Breakfast Club because it was before that.
It was Breakfast Club.
Okay. So they're in the middle of filming Breakfast Club, and he hands Anthony Michael Hall 30 pages of a script and says, I wrote this last night. You should take a look at it. This is our next project together.
Yes.
And that was the first 30 pages of Weird Science. And it's just absurd. Like, if you look at John Hughes's other stuff, this is beyond the absurd meter, comparatively speaking. Like, even Uncle Buck and the crazy.
Oh, not even
drills.
Close. Oh, yeah.
It's just, there's nothing as weird as Weird Science.
Nothing makes sense, but you absolutely accept it, right?
Yeah.
It's because we hooked up the computer. We bowled through the access denied thing. We went around the skull.
Yeah.
We hooked up the doll. We put bras on our head, and boom, you have a magic woman who appears out of nowhere.
You have to put the bras on your head.
Yeah. So we mentioned that John Hughes came to Anthony Michael Hall. You know, John Hughes is a very loyal guy, right? He leans on people that he trusts, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, Molly Ringwald has been a big part of John Hughes's catalog, right?
Right, yeah.
Macaulay Culkin was a big part of his catalog as well. He had latched on to Anthony Michael Hall. Okay, now get this. So Anthony Michael Hall had been in Vacation. He had been in 16 Candles. He had been in Breakfast Club, Weird Science. He was supposed to be in Pretty in Pink next and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He was supposed to be Ferris Bueller.
he was supposed to be Ferris Bueller. John Hughes wrote Ferris Bueller with Anthony Michael Hall in mind.
That's right. So get this. Matthew Broderick did such a good job. I can't really say anything bad about that performance. I think that was probably a better fit. But here's the thing. Anthony Michael Hall decided he wanted to do something other than John Hughes comedies.
Right. Which, what was it he picked?
He did Out of Bounds, right?
Yeah.
Which I did that podcast with Jeff Johnson. It's on their Patreon. If you go over to the Film Buy, sign up for their Patreon, go listen to the Out of Bounds episode.
Yeah.
It's like a fish out of water story where Anthony Michael Hall is a country boy. He goes to LA Sunset Strip in 86, which is pretty fun.
Right.
And makes terrible decisions, gets in trouble with the law, but he's kind of fighting for his own innocence. It's a dramatic role. It's kind of more serious. There's gunplay involved. It's not Farmer Ted.
Yeah, and it's completely forgettable.
Yeah, it is. And really, from that point forward, he struggles. He does Johnny B. Goode, which was kind of a fun 80s movie, but it wasn't a big hit.
Yeah.
He does Edward Scissorhands, and then he vanishes for about 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, he did. I don't remember when the Dead Zone TV series came out.
Early 2000s, but that's when he really reappears.
Yeah.
Which, and that's a great show. If you haven't seen that, it's a great TV series.
Go check out our old Cujo versus Christine versus the Dead Zone matchup from, I think it was October of 23?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That was kind of our Halloween thing.
Exactly.
All right, D, so let's get into casting. I got some stuff for you on the cast.
These casts are amazing and have some crazy stories.
They
really,
right?
For sure.
They really do, right? So let's go. We're right here at Weird Science. Let's go Weird Science.
Let's go Weird Science.
Okay. So we talked about Anthony Michael Hall already.
Yep.
Elon Mitchell Smith.
Yep.
By the way, why are we wearing bras on our heads?
Ceremonial.
He had just done The Wildlife. We talked about that with Eric Stoltz, Chris Penn, Leah Thompson.
Got his start in ballet. Did you know this?
I read that. Yeah. I didn't see any video of that, though.
Yeah, no. He had got a scholarship to a very good ballet school, but that was where he got discovered. He played the younger version of Timothy Hutton in the movie Daniel.
Okay.
Which was based on the book of Daniel.
It's biblical? Well, I cruised right past that. I saw Daniel. I'm like, I don't recognize that.
No. It's like there's a book called The Book of Daniel.
Lion's Den? What are we talking about?
I haven't seen the movie. I don't know. Maybe it is biblical. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
But then, yes, as we mentioned before, he was in The Wildlife, which is written by Cameron Crowe and had Chris Penn, Leah Thompson, and Eric Stoltz in it. And then they see him. And again, John Hughes and Anthony Michael Hall are tight, and they see him in The Wildlife, and they're like, let's get him as the other guy for this movie.
Right. By the way, I think he was paid about a third of the amount of Anthony Michael Hall, but
that's okay. That
kind of makes sense, right?
Here's some tidbits on him, okay?
Yeah.
He did some other stuff, obviously, but he quit acting in, I think it was 91.
Yes.
He got his bachelor's degree in medieval studies.
Right.
He got his master's degree in medieval studies.
Yeah.
And then he got his PhD from Texas A&M and is now a professor of English, I believe, associate professor of English.
Okay.
At Cal State University in Long Beach.
Okay.
But this whole medieval thing, he is a tabletop gamer. He is a guy who, like, he not only plays it, but, like, he organizes the events. He's, like, written some major articles on tabletop gaming, so he's a huge Dungeons & Dragons guy.
That's interesting.
Which is perfect for the character that he played, right?
He admits that he's a big nerd.
Yeah.
I've heard that he doesn't really want students to take pictures with him. He gets annoyed that people are like, Wyatt's teaching my class.
Right.
You know?
Well, he did do a brief cameo in The Goldbergs.
I saw that, yeah.
In the episode Weird Science, where one of the kids is like, I want to do what they did in Weird Science, and he's the science teacher going, you can't, that's not possible. Can't do that.
Right. And he lied, and Adam Goldberg is like, why did you lie? He's like, well, I had an older brother who was a butthead.
Sir, in your expert scientific opinion, is it possible for me to Weird Science up a girlfriend?
It was game over.
Scientifically speaking?
My teacher always took science seriously.
Absolutely.
Until he didn't.
I knew it! Watch out, Kelly LeBrock! Big Tasty's coming for you.
Why would you lie like that?
Between you and me, I have a butt wad of an older brother, too.
That's hilarious.
So, Okay, the part of Lisa.
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Which I found super interesting. They took the name from the Apple Lisa computer. Do you remember the Lisa?
No.
Way back at the beginning, like Steve Jobs had a daughter named Lisa, I think. Oh, and he named one of those first Apple computers, he called it the Lisa.
Okay.
And that's where they get the character Lisa from.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect.
Now, Kelly LeBrock.
Pantene.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful.
I still use Pantene conditioner to this day because of Kelly LeBrock. I am not lying. I have used Pantene conditioner for the last 40 years because
we don't hate you because you're beautiful. Well, thank you. But you know, on a serious note, that was an iconic commercial from the 80s.
Oh, heck yeah.
A lot of people were kind of turned off by that. I think I know some girls at my school were like, that's stupid.
They didn't make it for them.
I know.
I mean, they may envy her, but they're going to go buy the stuff that is going to make them look like, or make their hair look like her hair.
Right. So I sent you a little tidbit this morning that you didn't know. And I didn't know until last night.
Yeah.
There is a song, a prominent 80s song that is written about Kelly LeBrock.
Blew my mind, bro. Yes. Blew my mind.
Okay. That song is the Hall & Oates classic, Maneater. Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boys, to do you welcome.
Wow.
I heard John Oates talk about this. He said they were at a club in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of those clubs where famous people hung out, actors, singers, blah, blah, blah. And Kelly LeBrock walked in the room, sucked all the oxygen out, and everybody was like, well.
They were,
Yeah.
Of course.
So.
I mean, you've seen her.
Yes.
And
did an excellent job.
Yeah. So she was born in 1960. And
that make her 24, 25 in this picture?
Ish, yes.
Yeah.
And Elin Mitchell Smith was born in
70.
Like 69, I think. Yeah, he was born in 69. So in both of these movies, you have women in their mid-20s kissing deeply 15-year-old boys.
I know.
It's
I know.
Like... What?
I know.
Yeah.
And in both of these movies,
yeah.
You have popular songs written about those women.
Oh, that's... Wait a minute. There's a popular song on Weird Science?
On Real Genius. I'm sorry,
on Real Genius?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know this.
Hold tight.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah, all right. We're still talking casting on Weird Science. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay. That's a little teaser.
All right. So Kelly Imberg was originally hired. I think they went after Kelly LeBrock. She said something along the lines of she's having too much fun riding horses in Spain because that's what beautiful people do, right?
Rough life.
I know.
Yeah, right.
And so they brought in Kelly Imberg, who was a popular model in the 80s. I looked at her. She's pretty, but I don't recognize her.
Okay.
2 days, she gets the boot.
Yeah.
Creative differences. And they go after Kelly LeBrock again, say, hey, listen, we had to fire this girl. We really want you. Can you come? So she comes, and she takes the role of Lisa. She had just done... The Woman in Red.
Oh, right. Gene Wilder?
Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Can you name the song that was Oscar nominated?
Lady in Red? Not the name of the song?
Not that one.
Who's dancing with me? And what is it? I don't know. Cheek to cheek.
It's the Jason Colvin non-favorite, I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder.
That's right.
Which
that's
beat
right.
Against yeah. All Odds by Phil Collins, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yep. Go check out those episodes.
All right. Do you know... Who almost got the job of Lisa before Kelly Imberg was hired?
No. Christie Brinkley.
No, that's a good guess.
Yeah.
At that time, brace yourself. Robin Wright was almost hired as Lisa.
Wow.
What was she, 20?
Oh, yeah. She was a baby.
She's way
in,
young.
In 87 when Princess Bride
exactly.
came out. Yeah. What?
And Demi Moore.
Wow. That would have been a heck of a year for Demi Moore.
Seriously.
Because she was in three from 85 already, right?
Well, you got One Crazy Summer.
Yeah.
You had
About Last Night. Yeah.
And you had St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah.
And she was getting ready to start melting the camera.
Yeah. Still not Kelly LeBrock, though. Not that hot yet.
Whew. Man, smoking. Yeah. All right. We got to talk about Bill Paxton.
Yes, we do.
How about a nice... greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray.
This was kind of when I first became aware of him.
Absolutely.
He'd done a little bit, like he was one of the punks that got killed at the very beginning of the Terminator movie.
Right.
And, you know, he worked as a stagehand on
Metal
with the Stars or whatever.
Well, yeah, he was one of the right-hand guys for James Cameron when James Cameron was making crappy B movies for, what's his name? Roger Corman.
Yes. He was like gluing Big Mac boxes on the wall and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so Bill Paxton had done just a few things here and there. Mm-hmm. He's hired. He comes and does Weird Science.
Yeah.
He had been hired by this time to be Hudson in Aliens.
Okay.
But I heard Bill Paxton talk about that. He was nervous that James Cameron was going to watch Weird Science and think, this guy's an idiot. What are we doing? He's not a soldier. So he was real nervous about Weird Science and thought it was going to cost him his job in Aliens.
Yeah.
But instead, you get two fantastic Bill Paxton off-the-leash roles here.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
He's the funniest part of Weird Science.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The gun, when he wakes him up and he's got the gun. Oh, so the gun was made of plastic. Like, I was like, dang, he's hitting him hard.
Right.
But apparently the gun's made of plastic. But Anthony Michael Hall was like, we couldn't stop laughing because he was playing that. So he was so freaking funny.
I cracked up last night. I mean, everything about it. I mean, whacking them on the head, pushing her nose off. And then he goes in the other room and he blows the doorknob off with his shotgun and it scares the heck out of there. They wake right up. And so Bill Paxton is on fire in this.
Absolutely.
By the way, I told you right before we started, I read the guy in charge of the special effect of the Chet blob, right?
Yeah.
The doll, the blob.
Yes.
Which originally they were going to put Bill Paxton in and he was going to kind of puppet it, but it just didn't work. And so they had him like voice it off screen, whatever.
Right.
So the guy who was in charge of that effect said they struggled with it for a while. Like initially it looked too much like Jabba the Hutt and they weren't real happy with that. And then he said they went to a different design and ultimately it just wasn't funny. But he said it all flipped when they added the Chet's crew cut to the blob.
Would you please turn me back to normal, please? I haven't done anything to you.
No, but you've done plenty to your brother.
Like what?
Well, let me see. You've nagged him, harassed him, suppressed him, kept him in fear of you, extorted money from him.
It's done out of love.
Just for that, I ought to give you a set of elephant balls.
Right?
That's perfect.
And I was like, that's funny.
That's all you need.
Right?
You just need that one symbolic little thing. Yes.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Okay, so a couple of the girls I want to talk about real quick. Suzanne Snyder, Deb, she's the blonde.
She's been in a few things.
Yeah.
But she's always just kind of that girl that she never, she's very pretty. I always expected her to be more, but.
She had been in like Family Ties. She's in, like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. But there is kind of a connection to another movie in 86, which I've done with Jeff Johnson. Go over to the Film By Podcast, check them out.
Yeah.
But Suzanne Snyder and the girl who plays Sue, the perfume girl.
Perfume girl.
You the guys that got beat up at the homecoming dance, right? They were in a movie called Night of the Creeps,
which came out in 86. That's right. I remember, yeah.
By the way, Jason Lively plays the lead role in Night of the Creeps.
Uh-huh.
He replaced Anthony Michael Hall in European Vacation.
Oh,
he's Rusty.
Yeah, he's the new Rusty, yeah.
And Anthony Michael Hall passed on European Vacation to do Weird Science.
Okay.
But here's the interesting part. The girl who was originally supposed to be Audrey, they were going to bring her back. But when Anthony Michael Hall didn't return, they were like, well, let's just get two new people. So she lost her job because Anthony Michael Hall didn't come back.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about Judy Aronson for a second.
Okay.
First of all, she's about 60 years old now and still a smoke show.
Really?
Oh, man.
Okay.
So she had been in Friday the 13th, Part 7. She actually has kind of a cool little role, cameo role in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes, which also has Val Kilmer in it.
Which, that's right.
Also has Robert Downey Jr.
Well, that's why she got the role, is because she had played Robert Downey Jr.'s girlfriend in Weird Science.
There you go. Okay.
And there was that connection. She walked up to him and talked to him in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Is in this movie. He plays Ian.
His character's name is Ian. Okay, yeah.
We talked about how, at this time in his career, he's still playing the best friend. He's not leading role material. He is definitely way far from Tony Stark.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's way far from less than zero at this point, even though it's just a few years away.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's playing the funny sidekick best friend roles.
Right.
By the way, he and Anthony Michael Hall are like true blue friends, like been friends for
that makes sense.
Years now.
Yeah.
Anthony Michael Hall is the godfather of one of Robert Downey Jr.'s daughters.
Okay.
And they also, if you remember, Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey Jr. were cast members of Saturday Night Live.
That's right. For like one year. Season. Yeah. That was the last of the non-Lauren Michael seasons. Yeah. And at the end of that season, he grabbed John Lovitz and pulled him out of the burning building where the rest of the cast was supposed to have perished. That's how bad Saturday Night Live had gotten at that point.
Golly. Robert Ressler plays Max.
Huh?
Call him Mad Max. This is his first acting role.
Yeah.
In fact, his first scene was dropping the slushy at the mall.
It's a great scene.
He said about 30 seconds before film was rolling, they made up that fake little handshake.
Nice.
And he and Robert Downey Jr. were friends from that. His next role, he played like one of the main people in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. drove him to that audition.
That's great.
Pretty cool, right? That's great. Just a couple more people I want to mention real quick.
Okay.
You have Vernon Wells, who plays the lead biker.
Okay.
That destroys Gary and Wyatt's house.
So Anthony Michael Hall said, it's a weekend. John Hughes and I are watching Mad Max. And he said, we're going to get that guy to be in the movie. And that's what happened.
Wow. And he looks exactly like he does in it's the same character. It's a different name, but it looks exactly the same.
Yes. And I don't know who the metal face guy is, but the bald guy is the guy from The Hills Have Eyes.
Yep.
Keep this.
I hate to lose my teaching position.
Yeah.
So that the guy with the metal face,
yeah,
he's a stuntman.
Okay.
In fact, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
So he always does like big guy stunts.
Yeah, right.
But Michael Berryman, he's the bald headed guy from The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes.
He plays the principal in the Motley Crue Smoking in the Boys' Room.
That's right. He's got the ridiculous toupee. That's right. Yeah.
But Vernon Wells, the head biker.
Yeah.
He plays a bad guy in a movie we're getting ready to talk about. He's the bad guy in Commando.
Yeah.
I'm anxious. You still haven't watched that yet?
I still haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I have not watched Commando. I have not watched Rambo. Everybody be sure and hit that subscribe button so that you will be here when I tell you about losing my Rambo Commando virginity.
Yes. Okay. I just want to touch on John Kapalos was in this for just a few minutes. He's the owner of the bar.
Okay.
He was the janitor in Breakfast Club.
Oh, the Malacca guy.
I don't know what to tell you. She's into Malaccas. Yes.
They improv that whole scene. Like they had it kind of sketched out, but the rest of it was just improv. And it's hysterical. It's top of, I would say, top three scenes in that movie.
Oh, it's so funny, right?
Yes. And the other top scene in the movie is whenever she's talking to his parents.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
She kneed him in the nuts and called him in front of everyone. Which they throw that word around a little bit.
Kneed him in the nuts. Kneed me in the nuts.
In the family jewels, yeah.
Give me the keys. I can drive.
Howdy, Zilver, said the girl. So, Chino Fats Williams, you know him by his voice.
Yeah.
He plays Fats.
In the family jewels.
Broke my heart. Yeah. Broke more than your heart. And I just want to drop a quick name on you. Kim Malin. Does that name mean anything to you? Do you remember when the piano gets sucked out of the chimney?
Well, sure. And that's a memorable scene for anybody who was 10, 11 in 1985.
You've got to pause it and really kind of focus in to see anything.
Yeah. So having just watched it, I was like, oh, she's less nude than I thought she was. She's got her bra and panties on when she's holding on. But as she gets sucked out, she no longer has the bra on because John Hughes.
Well, when you have the Playmate of the Month from May of 1982.
She's an excellent piano player.
When you've got somebody of that caliber, you've got to, don't you have to? Well,
it's obligations. I don't know.
Do you remember the last time we talked about a Playmate from 1982?
No.
Marianne Gravette, who was in the Lay It Down video, which was in our Best of 85.
Oh, wow.
She was in the Rat video, Lay It Down.
Okay.
All right. that does it for Cast for Weird Science.
Okay, guys, that is going to be the end of part one of Weird Science versus Real Genius. Come back next week for part two. We will talk about casting for Real Genius. We will tell you about all the exciting tidbits. We'll talk about the cool songs and music that were involved in these movies. And we will give you our final judgment on which of these two 1985 nerd hero movies are the best. See you guys then.
Thanks, guys.
Pretending like it's 1985 and I'm drinking a Coke.
Nice.
I don't drink these on the regular, but this
I noticed that.
And this is cis. I guess I'm cis today. I don't know. Okay.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.